Thank you for staying for the last talk before lunchtime. And I was going to initially talk about the synthetic work that I've done and also soil iron oxide work, but I'm going to focus on a synthetic work today. Okay, so iron oxides are everywhere. And as we all know, they play important role in contaminant retention as well as nutrient retention, such as phosphate, as we've heard in a previous talk. And here in this study, I'm focusing on phthalate, as it's one of the most reactive nanoscale ion hydroxide that we find in soil. And it retains, it has high surface area, and it does a really, really good job of scavenging contaminants and nutrients in soil. Now, I wanted to point out here that phthalate is thermodynamically unstable, and it has propensity to transform to more crystalline phase, such as goethite and magnetite that I'm showing here. And also, I wanted to say here that presence of iron 2 could catalyze conversion of phthalate to goethite and magnetite. So we actually know a lot about the behavior of synthetic pure ion oxides and hydroxides. We know a lot about contaminant nutrient retention and release. We know a lot about reducibility of these ion oxides and their propensity to transform. But nothing is quite pure in soil. And what I wanted to point out today is that ion oxides in soil are not chemically pure. And majority of ion oxides in soil have aluminum substitution. Going back to phthalate, we know the phthalate transforms to crystalline phases depending on a different concentration of iron 2. And I need to back up one step and say that phthalate is highly bioavailable. So once oxygen gets depleted, microbes in soil can start respiring using phthalate. Now that iron 2 that's produced during that process could react with phthalate, and phthalate could get converted to crystalline phase, such as goethite and magnetite. So that's well documented, and we know the mechanism. Now, what we don't know is what happens when we have chemically impure iron oxides. So, in order to see if there's any impact on phthalate transformation in presence of structural aluminum, I first did a very simple experiment. I made pure two-line phthalate. I also made aluminum co-precipitated aluminum doped phthalate. Then I added different concentration of iron too, and I saw what happened. And as you can quickly see, when we add iron 2, the color changes, and that means the mineralogy of the iron is changing. Now with aluminum phthalate, we add iron 2, we see slight changes in color, but not as extensive as the pure phthalate. And we take this sample and do XRD on it, and we see a clear difference. So what I'm showing here is the initial phthalate on the bottom. We react it with 0.2 millimolar iron 2, and we see formation of goethite. Now we move on to aluminum phthalate. This is the initial aluminum phthalate. We add 2 millimolar iron 2, and we don't see any change. Now we increase concentration of iron 2, and as we've seen with lower iron 2 concentration, we of course see transformation of pure phthalate into goethite. With aluminum phthalate, finally we are starting to see changes in the mineralogy at 2 millimolar iron 2, which is pretty high. Okay, so now we know that aluminum phthalate does transform to goethite, but based on this simple experiment that I conducted, we know we need a lot higher concentration of iron 2 to induce transformation of aluminum phenhydrate. So the question is, why? Why is aluminum phenhydrate less labile compared to pure phenhydrate? And one of our hypotheses was maybe ion 2 retention is limited in presence of ion 2, which is the first step for ion 2 catalyzed transformation of phenhydrate. So in order to answer that question, we've conducted some breakthrough experiment using column setup. So what I've done was I made pure two-line phenhydrite and aluminum phenhydrite, coated on quartz sand. I packed them in a very small column, and I had input ion 2 concentration at pH 7, and I measured what came out of the column. So by measuring how much ion 2 is coming out, we can understand how much ion 2 is basically remained in the solid phase. And this is what we see. So x-axis is showing pore volume, which is basically time. And on y-axis, I'm showing ion 2 concentration. And first, we're going to look at how soon ion 2 elution sort of started from the column. And what we quickly see is, so the red is showing aluminum containing phenhydrite, and green is showing pure two-line phenhydrite. Now, ion 2 is eluting a lot faster from aluminum phenhydrite column compared to pure two-line phenhydrite column. What that tells us is, initially at least, ion 2 retention on aluminum phenhydrite is limited compared to pure two-line phenhydrite. Now, we're going to look at how long it takes for ion 2 concentration to reach maximum from the time the ion 2 elution started. Now, in case of phenhydrite, it takes not so long to reach a maximum ion 2 concentration. So once the ion 2 loading reaches to a critical threshold for phenhydrite, it rapidly transforms to crystalline phase such as goethite and magnetite. Now, in case of aluminum phenhydrite, of course, compared to phenhydrite, it takes much, much longer to reach to the maximum ion 2 concentration from the column. And what that tells us is that rate of transformation is a lot slower, and lability of aluminum phenhydrite is much less in presence of ion 2 compared to pure 2-line phenhydrite. And what I'm showing here is an SEM image of the solid that I've obtained from this column. And you can see majority of the phenhydrite has been converted to goethite and some magnetite. Now, in case of aluminum phenhydrite, we see very small, so this is, by the way, 500 nanometers. So these needles are quite small. In presence of aluminum, they're really, really trying hard to transform to goethite, but they're really struggling. And we end up with these tiny needles compared to these pure two-line phenhydrite. Okay, so now the other question that we wanted to ask was, okay, so does aluminum phenhydrite reductively dissolve? So in order to answer that question, I have a similar setup, except I've inoculated these solids with Shuvanella, species NO3, which is a model ion 3 reducers that's extensively used in a laboratory setup. And what I did was I fed these Shuvanella with 1 millimolar lactate. So I had a flow of food coming in, and I measured what came out of this column. And this is what we see. X-axis is showing pore volumes, basically it's time. And y-axis is showing, instead of concentration, I'm showing total ion 2 dissolved in total in moles from the column. So it's a cumulative number that I'm showing on the y-axis. And aluminum phenhydrite does dissolve, reductively dissolve, in presence of metal-reducing bacteria. And in fact, it dissolves more than pure two-line phenhydrite. Now, if we take a look at the solid phase, about half of the pure phenhydrite has been transformed, but in presence of aluminum, the phenhydrite didn't transform. Now, it's providing, so again, let me go back to the other study that I've done. So aluminum limits iron to retention, and also the surface area is still quite high in aluminum phthalate column. And as a result, we're having much greater dissolution of aluminum phthalate compared to pure two-line phthalate column system. So aluminum phthalate is as available to microorganisms as two-line phthalate. So what does this mean? Pure two-line phthalate, in presence of iron 2, does transform, and it sequesters and retains some of the iron 2 in form of magnetite. On the other hand, aluminum phthalate wants to dissolve, and it doesn't really want to transform. And it has huge implication for contaminants, and I've been studying arsenic. And for example, for arsenic, arsenic 3 doesn't really like aluminum. I forgot to mention one thing in a previous slide, that aluminum didn't come out in a solution phase, so it's doing incongruent dissolution. So aluminum concentration is overall increasing relative to iron. Okay, so what does it mean for some of the contaminants that we know? So in aluminum phthalate case, the aluminum at the surface is increasing, and arsenic 3, we know that has very limited retention to aluminum. So when we think about contaminant release, we can't really ignore chemical impurity in iron oxides. So with that, I'd like to thank Guan Chao for ICP analysis, and Kate Tufano, she helped me with the column setup. And some of the solid phase analysis was done at SSRL, and I'd like to thank everybody in Fendolf Lab at Stanford. Thank you. Yes. Yeah.
Nice stuff.
Thanks.
I'm curious what aluminum. It's a two-part question. What aluminum concentration did you have in your very high grade?
Yes. 20%. Yeah, so 20% is about maximum for phthalate.
So then, but then post-reaction, that last couple of mm-hmm. slides, and you have more aluminum mm-hmm. in the solid phase, do mm-hmm. you see gibbsite crystals, or do you?
Yeah, so I didn't see crystalline aluminum hydroxide forming, but it's possible, and it's highly likely that it's forming some discrete poorly crystalline aluminum phase at the surface that we can't really detect. Yeah.
Anybody have questions? What do you think the inclusion of aluminum structure does to the maybe zero point of charge of the surface, mm-hmm. and maybe that affecting the way this aluminum phthalate mm-hmm. aluminum is reacting?
Yeah. So at 20%, it increases PZC slightly, but not much. Not much.
Do you have a sense of where the aluminum is?
You know, that's an important question, and I know that one of my colleagues is working on it. We don't know yet.
Any other questions? Yes.
Have you done any diffraction on the GERD type that you're producing from the aluminum substituted? To see if there's a change in the unit cell dimensions based on whether or not the aluminum is being incorporated or not?
So I didn't have luck doing diffraction for some of the solids from the column, because I have sand and I get this intense quartz peak, and I didn't have success. But the previous work by Shortman have shown that the unit cell does change when aluminum is in the structure of goethite.
Thank you.